A Mass Inc. study published last November found Massachusetts elected officials do not reflect the diversity of the Commonwealth. According to the report, unbalanced representation by race and ethnicity are apparent, as well as gaps by gender and party affiliation. Today, we discuss what it takes to run for elected office, whether a local board or the state legislature, why we don't see more diverse candidates, and some of the supports available to help prepare individuals to run for office. Joining us in studio is Sheila Lyons. She's a former member of the Assembly of Delegates, a former county commissioner, and was a candidate for state senate. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. Good morning.
And John Milligan, political director at MassGOP. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Joining us from our studio at WGBH, we welcome back Judy Zahnbrecher. She's co-president of the Massachusetts chapter of the League of Women Voters. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
And on the phone, Veronica Martinez, executive director of the Mass Democratic Party. Welcome to you as well.
Good morning.
Have you ever considered running for town or a county board or the state legislature? If you did run, what was your experience like? If you didn't, what are some of the reasons you decided not to run? We'd love to hear from you this hour. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Sheila, let's start with you. When you did first decide to run for elected office, what was the biggest surprise for you as you entered politics?
Oh, the biggest surprise. That people are receptive. I think that you go out there and you're kind of, you know, it's a little bit of a hubris. You know, I can come and represent you. And people are more than interested in that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was the biggest surprise I had. I thought maybe people were turned off. They didn't want to talk to you. They're not interested. I ran for obscure seats, in a sense, at that time, and to educate them. And people appreciate your passion.
Yeah, I think there's still people go, what is the Assembly of Delegates?
Right.
What is
the and what does that work with the Cape Cod Commission?
You know. John, the Mass Inc. report found that Democrats hold 80% of the seats in the state legislature, yet they account for just one-third of registered voters and only about half of voters when including independents who lean toward the Democratic Party. The report goes on to say, to reflect the partisan values of the voters, the legislature would need an additional 16 Republican members. So what is the Mass GOP doing to seek out and groom potential Republican candidates?
Yeah, so I don't think it's any surprise that we are in a super minority in both the state, you know, the House of Representatives and the state Senate. So one of the things that the Mass GOP is doing right now is, of the seats in the House, we have 75 targeted districts where we're looking at how Republicans have performed statewide. So, you know, going back to post-redistricting in 2010. So Scott Brown, when he lost, Governor Baker, when he won the first time, second time, how presidential candidates have performed, and saying, okay, why are we winning these districts at the kind of gubernatorial level, at the federal level, but we're not winning them at the state rep and state senate level. And, you know, one of the things that we find is that people, again, what we're talking about here, kind of want to run but aren't necessarily sure. So one of the programs and initiatives that we've launched under Chairman Lyons and I'm working very closely with is what we're calling our Minuteman program. So it's based on what the RNC does with their Young Gun program. And it's basically that was brought in. It was developed by when we were in a minority in the House and back are, unfortunately, in a way to kind of take back the House. And so some kind of the highlights of that have come through those programs, Dan Crenshaw's one. There are several others. Last cycle, Peter Tedeschi and Rick Green were both at the like on the radar level. And Kevin McCarthy just released his first round of Young Guns about a week ago. And what we saw from that program is it was just basically taking people who wanted to run for Congress and wanted to run and had, you know, in good districts and had kind of the backing, and taught them how to run and kind of put them on the map. And we said, why aren't we doing that on the state rep level? And that's what we've developed. The Minuteman program is kind of a one-stop shop to take people in, say, okay, you live in a great, you know, you live in Sandwich, Massachusetts in the 5th Barnstable District. That's a great seat, and it's opening up, and you want to run for it. Awesome. Here's how we do it. Here's how we take you from walking through the door and wanting to run to get you elected in November. And that's one of the things that we're working on right now.
Veronica, while Democrats are well represented in the elected office, we see a preponderance of white men. How is the Mass Democratic Party trying to seek out more ethnic and gender diversity?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we reflect that in our party. We understand that to have diverse voices at the table, we need to make space for it. We need to make seats for them. And so the way our party is structured, we actually have add-on seats. So we have our state committee. The Republican Party has a state committee as well. Many of these folks are elected on the ballot or in local caucuses. But after these elections, we look at the representation within our state committee, and then we look at the proportion, the demographics throughout the Commonwealth, and we make sure that our state committee is reflective of those demographics throughout the Commonwealth. So we have add-on seats that we elect as well, and that process is ongoing. So we're looking for folks who are interested in running for these seats who might represent underrepresented communities who'd like to join the state committee and make sure that their voices are heard. And that helps us develop our programming, too. We started in 2017 a program called the Democratic Campaign Institute. This is a program for candidates, folks who want to be campaign staffers, or just activists to learn the kind of tools of the trade of running for office and how to run a strong campaign. We've seen a lot of success with that program. In even years, we do it as a sort of regional boot camp series. So we go out to localities, we host boot camps in the area, and we reach out to community organizations, elected officials there, and other activist organizations to encourage attendance there. And in odd years, we do it as a kind of seminal institute, a two-day affair in a city as well. And so when we're planning these institutes, we target areas that have lower representation from the Democratic Party or might need a little bit of help representing those underrepresented communities within the legislature. And we consider at the party a good Democratic Institute turnout to be one where we don't recognize any of the names on the sign-in sheet. We want to be reaching out to new people who aren't familiar with this process, who need to learn the tools to be able to kind of voice themselves within these structures. And so that's an initiative that we've been doing since 2017. We've trained over 400 new people, and we're excited about that because it's not just about the candidates, it's also about representation within the campaigns themselves.
Mm, yeah. Judy, what are some of the reasons we aren't seeing more women and non-whites running for elected office in the state?
That's a good question. From a league standpoint, we focus more on educating voters and people on how to run for office. So helping women and also people of color or people from immigrant status, providing them the information, basically, especially at a local level, on how to run for office. How do you file? What are the offices that are available? Hearing from the Office of Campaign and Political Finance, what are the forms? Just those basics so people can feel comfortable with it. We also bring in people who have actually run for office who look like them. We think that's very important so that they can provide their insight as to why they ran, how they formed a campaign committee, what type of support they could expect potentially from either one of the parties. So that's what we do. We think that there's a real opportunity to further that education amongst all of our communities. With regards to our members, we seek to expand our reach into different communities because the League in general, we're very civically engaged, and it provides a platform for anybody to come in and start learning about local government, how to advocate, how to present a position, and we think that's important also to build that confidence.
Yeah. Sheila, what were some of the biggest challenges when you were running for office, and what do you think would help entice more women and minorities to run?
Well, I think to a certain degree, you do have to have, you have to keep your head on.
Thick skin.
Yeah, you definitely have to have a thick skin. And I don't want to just say that women have a harder time, but women do have a harder time. I think in the beginning, people are receptive because they're happy to see a woman run. And if you have good ideas, they'll, wow, that's really great. But in the end, when you're up against a male opponent, there is that nuance that you have to be able to be forceful, concise, confident, and just very sure. And if you go a little bit beyond that, and it will be looked at as snarky, below the belt, whereas men can get away with those things much easier. So there is still this the feminine mystique type of thing that you have to maintain while you are trying to actually challenge someone. So,
anybody else have thoughts on that? Agree or disagree with Sheila?
I agree with Sheila. That's certainly what various studies, whether it's United States or around the world, find that women running for political office, or even when they hold office, are more attacked more often verbally on social media for not conforming to what's expected from a woman. And And that's very important in terms of women learning how to engage with people and project that confidence.
Yeah. We know many local elected officials don't offer compensation, and if they do, it's more of a stipend than a salary. Most elected officials, even in state legislature, also have full-time jobs. Is the lack of compensation a problem as we look to entice more people to run? Anybody can jump in on it.
Yeah. The League has advocated really since the 60s to make sure that the certainly in the legislature, that both the legislatures are paid a reasonable salary, that there's an independent commission that ensures the salaries across state government are equitable so that you're not penalized for being, say, in the legislature versus being in an executive-type position. We also have been advocating since the 60s and the 70s for ensuring that the aides, because that's very important also if you're going to be a legislature, to have the support that you need to study bills, that there's good personnel practices there so that you can hire in and be provided with the aides that you need. And then also just having a legislative research office that can provide support across the board. So it's not only the salary, but also the support that legislatures need to be an effective government.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I can jump in on this, I would say that I think that we could take a model from some of our fellow New England states and kind of look at what they do and in their legislatures. I mean, up in New Hampshire, been up there a lot recently. And, you know, their state rep, they have a much larger House of Representatives than we do. And they are, it's truly a citizen legislature, right? The state reps are compensated, I think it's like $100 a year. So the expectation is that they have a job. But I would say that the role of their government, their state government, has not, especially in the legislature, has not expanded to the level that we have here in the Commonwealth. So I think personally that in kind of state legislature, that is a better model to move to, but that also would call for a reduction in kind of the scope of what we're doing at the state legislature, because obviously I think the time commitment here in Massachusetts is larger than what they're expected to do in New Hampshire. But there are models. I mean, even I remember meeting Governor LePage in the 2018 cycle in Maine, and, you know, he was kind of astonished by how much we pay our legislatures. And he told us about how his wife still works as a waitress in the local restaurant in their hometown. And it's like, it's a very different model. And but I think that comes with a different view of what the state government is and what it should be doing.
Go ahead, Jill.
Just to look at other models in Maryland, the assembly, it's called the assembly there, will come for 3 months, and that's when they get all of their work done. Now, they work on those bills, but everybody does have their job, but it's really like an intense 3 months. They have to hash it out. They got to pass it, and then everybody goes home. It's sort of like the way our beginnings were, where everybody just came in and then went back to the farm. So, but we have a government. We have needs now. We're huge. We're a big place, and there are all of these forces that we have to deal with.
And,
have to invest.
Yeah, it's not easy to pass legislation either, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you think about it, we are really investing in ourselves. When we use, everybody wants to say big government, but now with coronavirus, we want to have the CDC acting properly, but you don't want to give them those funds when things are fine and there is no crisis. Mm. So we have to actually understand that by hiring people in our government, we're hiring our own people, because it's our money saying this is very important to us and we need to have research on this and we need these legislators or our leaders to pay attention to this.
I think that's an important point, but I think it's also important to understand the cost for folks when they're campaigning. This is something that we experience a lot at the Democratic Party. When we're talking to folks during the Democratic Campaign Institute, that of course this isn't a guarantee of any future position, and so making the decision to run is an expensive one as well. I think a good example is even Trump Wynn up in the northern part of the state made a decision to run, and that was she speaks frequently at our DCIs about how that was an important decision to her. She's a fantastic representative, but she had to step away from her job to do so. And that's a big decision for folks, and that can be prohibitive. So we try to talk through the campaign structure, the idea of working part-time while you're campaigning too, and to fundraise for these positions as well. But that can be a big barrier to folks when they're considering running for office.
Yeah, and Judy, I was going to say, when we look at the amount of money you need for even some of these smaller offices is getting larger and larger all the time.
Right. I guess one thing back to the previous comment about having a much larger legislature and not having it meet full time. Back in the 60s and 70s, the League took the position and helped advocate for having a smaller membership in the House of Representatives and also ensuring that we do have a legislature that meets sufficiently, because we are a huge budget in our state, and the people deserve to have someone there with their voice saying how things should be run when we're dealing with transportation and the climate emergency and health care. Having just part-time membership and $100 would be like running a huge corporation with someone who comes in maybe two or three weeks a year to get their voice in. It's just doesn't seem to us to be an appropriate way mm-hmm. to run a government. With regards to the money that's needed for running for office, that's why we support campaign finance reform, and then also ensuring that there continues to be the public option available for running for statewide offices. We'd like to see that expanded within the state so that it can be more affordable for people to run for office. Additionally, there are barriers for young people with families for running for office, and we're advocating for a bill in the House right now, or the legislature right now, that allows the use of campaign funds for child care, which is not allowed right now. You can pay for a limousine to take you from one place to the other with your campaign finances, as long as it's election-related, but you can't pay for child care, and we think that really discourages young people and family parents from running for office.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about how to run for elected office. In studio with us is Sheila Lyons, former member of the Assembly of Delegates, former county commissioner, and she was a candidate for state senate. John Milligan, political director at Mass GOP, from our studios at WGBH. Judy Zombrucker, who's the co-president of the Massachusetts chapter of the League of Women Voters, and on the phone, Veronica Martinez, executive director of the Mass Democratic Party. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Before the break, we touched on money, and money, you can have a really, really good candidate, right? And they're not raising any money. And John, let me ask you, when you look at that, you go, oh, not viable.
So I wouldn't necessarily say that I do, you know, but I think that there is kind of the perception out there that some people will, and especially donors, right? So I know that some, you know, larger donors will check the OCPF report for a candidate to see not only how much they're raising, but how they are spending their money. But in that, and I think there's a certain threshold that candidates, if they're not able to generate enough, you know, donations, that other people kind of wait. They hold off on their donation to see what's going to happen. And I mean, it does take a lot of money to raise these races, to run these races. I mean, there are candidates who have been successful with kind of small war chests, and they go out and you can make up with it for grassroots and door knocking and stuff like that. But I definitely think that there is a perception of viability based on how much, especially when we talk about primary contests, mm-hmm. right? That's, I would say that even intensifies the scrutiny of who's donating to who, who's outraising who, and some of those.
Veronica, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this actually relates back to one of the earlier questions in the conversation about why some Republicans fare better statewide in certain areas. Look at viability at the Democratic Party. What's really important to us is connections to the community, especially for seats like state representative or state senator. We find that people really want to elect people who are engaged in their communities, who they know from around town, who participate in the activities there. At the Democratic Party, we don't get involved in primaries. I'm not sure if that's exactly the same at the Republican Party. That's something that John could speak to. But we choose who the voters choose from the primary process. And so that is our candidate. So we're not making those type of viability decisions. But when we get involved in the race after the primary, we're looking for volunteer capacity. We're looking for local engagement. And so that's how we're really judging. That's not to say that money is not important. It, of course, is, especially in competitive races. But on a local level, what's really important to us is what their connections are to the community.
Yeah. Sheila, when you, I'm just thinking fundraising, that's a big stumbling block for a lot of people who are thinking about running. It's a lot of pressure, right? I mean, you have to have the money.
And the worst thing to do is to ask for money for yourself.
Right.
I could ask for money for you if you were running for office, but to say I need you to give me your money because I'm it's a very difficult thing, especially to people who you do not know, mm-hmm. and you're selling yourself. So it feels very retail. It feels, I mean, not retail, but like you're selling yourself,
right?
You know, instead of your ideas, and you also, have to get over that.
There's also the legal, ethical, administrative pieces, perspective, all of that.
You're going to be taking money from someone you don't really whose values you make, but they're going to give you money. So there's decisions you have to make, which is all a part of your how far are you going to compromise? So there are those. But just to get back to the money, there was a time that money did not dictate. It was the people on the ground, the swell of how many people were behind you. Now we look at the money first, not the idea, not the voice of what are the words coming out of this person's, how much money do you have? And that, I think, has had an impact on us as an electorate as well. This country has become a consumer. More and more, it's about money in all kinds of aspects. And politics is really the example that has hurt us the most, where we just judge people on that. And we have to get back to voting for your values, not on if this person represents you and everything you believe in. Why are you not voting for that as opposed to you think they might not win because they don't have enough money?
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, and I think that right now we're almost seeing a shift, maybe hopefully away from some of the back to kind of grassroots campaigning and like people, I think there's a groundswell of people who are willing to go out and knock doors and kind of do the yeoman work to get out there that'll counterbalance some of that. And, you know, just to Veronica's point, at the Mass GOP, we don't get involved in primaries either, and we support, you know, whoever is chosen. And I think that one of the big things that we do and what we work with if candidates don't have a primary when they come out of the primary is kind of teaching them how to raise money. Because exactly to your point, I think it's difficult to, you know, pick up the phone or go to someone and say, hey, you know, I'm running for office. Would you write, like, teaching them how to do that, how to write a letter to your friends and family, how to write fundraising, how to make those calls is a huge learning curve for people who want to get involved in politics. Because most of them, you know, they've talked to people, but they've never had to go and ask for money.
Hard to ask for money, too. We have a question from Danny. He says, how do the guests feel about candidates for office using paid political consultants? Do we need them? Should we have them? What do you think?
Well, I think that that's also been part of our problem. I mean, politics has become a business. And it's all about having all these other people tell you how to be, as opposed to you were going to run for office because you believed in something. You know, it's an issue that drove you. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to fix this. Or I believe that I actually have something to offer, honesty, integrity. I will fight for who I represent and for all people because I believe that I'm coming down on the right side. Those things that's really what we should be looking at. And as far as the investment, I think part of our problem is we were just saying offline here, you know, government is us. We keep talking about this government's doing these things, this government's. We are the government. And that is what we are in politics is our platform of how we hash out. What are we going to do with our resources? What are our priorities? And that has been lost because people have given up on us because we gave up on them. Mm-hmm. They weren't the super voter. They didn't come in the first tier, second tier. They vote once in a while. Let's not talk to them.
OK, hold it right there. Some people are going super voter. This tier?
Super voter is they will vote in every election. They have never missed an election. They've been a Democrat or a Republican straight through their life. They are a sure vote. You got to get those. Then you go to the next ones that are sometime voters, maybe just national, not in the primary. So you got to get them. Then you got to go to the odd. And then if they're the people who have never voted in the last 10 years, you don't even talk to them. And those are the people who are angry today.
Right.
Because we've left them behind. And if we don't include and also the technology, you were saying, you know, the grassroots has been lost on this. We were talking about Moakley is running in this thing. Well, Joe Moakley was my congressman. I learned how to write envelopes to practice my penmanship, writing out envelopes because everybody sat around tables. Everybody was a social thing. And you had a real stake in this person that was physical and your body was in it. That doesn't happen today. You can send money. Click a thing,
internet.
I'm going to like this or I'm going to dislike that, and that's as far as your participation is.
One of the things I was going to ask you. One of the things we got people go, well, I see a lot of signs for so and so. signs don't vote.
No. Signs do not vote.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
In kind of what we talk about, the, you know, teaching people how to run for office, a lot of people say, well, you know, like, I got to get signs up. I have to get signs up. That's the big thing. And, it, you know, driving into the studio today and being down here, you know, you're definitely reminded that there is a special election going on for state Senate with multiple candidates in both primaries. And but they don't at the end of the day. Right. And so not to say, you know, don't get signs and don't put them up. But those are some of the things that we have to teach candidates. And to your point about hiring consultants and things like that, I mean, at some level, right, you are, if you're running for U.S. Senate or you're running for Congress, you're going to have, you know, a general consultant and maybe a firm. And one of the things we've done at the Mass GOP is we've partnered with Axiom Strategies. That's a nationwide consulting firm that we work with, you know, on a basically daily basis to provide that to our candidates running, you know, at the local level, so that, you know, when we tell candidates, if you want to go out and pay a consultant, that, you know, at the end of the day, that's your choice. It's your campaign. But a lot of that aspect of things that we can provide to you as part of the support mm-hmm. that you get from the state party when you're looking to run through our Minuteman program.
Veronica, does the Democratic Party do that as well?
We do similar things to that effect. And to the consulting question, I think it is important to incorporate people on your campaign who can kind of smooth that learning curve, even as we're talking about super voters or signs don't vote. It's good to have folks on board who have that experience. But one of the first things we tell candidates when we help their campaign after the primary is that they need to develop a kitchen cabinet. They need to develop mm-hmm. people that they can trust. To Sheila's point about people who will keep you honest to yourself, they know who you were, what your values are. They're not going to let you get led astray. So it's great to have consultants to help with some of the hard tack aspects, and that's certainly what we help with at the party too. But we never want to bigfoot any of the candidates and make sure that they're staying true to why they got elected in the primary in the first place.
Yeah. I had a couple of thoughts in terms of signs why they don't vote. One thing they do is they make people aware there's an election coming up, and they therefore will start researching the candidates. Also, the League provides a couple services that are completely free. One is candidate forums, where we invite candidates to participate. And we videotape many of those so that they're accessible on public television or on their local cable channels, afterwards. We also do voter guides, and this upcoming year we will have an online voter guide that people will be able to access. We will put all the candidates in there with just the basic information, but we will also be sending out questions to every single candidate that they can respond to, and we'll post those responses in our voter guide. So there are resources available that don't cost anything, and we do find we have a very good reach with those approaches.
Before I let you go, I have to talk about negative campaigning. We hear, you know, Massachusetts politics is a blood sport, so you've got exaggeration of the truth, outright lies, are unfortunate aspects of politics. How often do we see that in Massachusetts politics, and what's your advice for candidates who are the target of these negative campaigns? John, I'll start with you.
I definitely think that, you know, if you're going to get involved in this, you have to have some thick skin, right? And whether that's, you know, in the age of social media, people tweeting at you, people commenting on your Facebook, you know, sometimes I tell candidates just ignore it. And I mean, that's tough to do, right? Especially in one of the things I think sometimes we in the who work in the political realm have to remember is our candidates are people, right? They have families, they have home lives, they have to go home to their kids see stuff on social media, their, you know, relatives do and have to ask them. So it's definitely not easy. I think that's, you know, it's part of where we are right now. And you have to work with a candidate on that and to remind them, you know, you stay on message. This is why you got in. This is what you're trying to do. And, you know, just keep doing what you need to do. And sometimes you have to put on the blinders and block out some of that noise.
Veronica?
Yeah, at the party, you know, we sometimes expect in specials or in tough elections the kind of local October surprise, so to speak. But we tell candidates to stay focused. Oftentimes these are issues or they're timed in such a way or they're mailed in such a way to actually inflame the candidate, make them think it's a larger deal. Oftentimes it doesn't actually resonate with voters. So I would agree with John. It's important for the candidate to stay focused on why they want to be elected rather than, you know, any of those distractions. And so that's oftentimes what we advise candidates. Is that if you pay attention to this, if you create this into a bigger thing, I know that you know it's a lie, and that's frustrating, and you can want to set the record straight, but by doing so, you might actually give it more attention than it's worth.
I will post links to the Mass GOP State Committee, Mass Democratic State Committee, and the League of Women Voters at our website, capeandislands.org. We're talking with Sheila Lyons, former County Commissioner, John Milligan, Political Director at Mass GOP, Judy Zombrecker, Co-President of the Massachusetts Chapter of the League of Women Voters, and Veronica Martinez, Executive Director of the Mass Democratic Party. Party. Thank you all. I'm sorry we don't have more time. There's so much more we could cover. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for joining us today. Thanks to Dave Goodman and Gary Mott for production assistance in Boston.